kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid. What's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. What a beautiful spring day, don't you think? Beautiful spring weekend. And it's not technically spring, of course, but you know, it's sort of a semi-artificial dividing line. They fold into each other rather than cut and dry, but we all know that. I was exhausted today. How about you? And I blame daylight savings time. Someone said the devil's time, and I totally agree with that. And you might be able to hear a little lark in the background. That is the three and a half month old dachshund puppy who comes with Joey to Mouthful. So you can hear her whining, but that's just part of the ambiance of Mouthful. We're talking about cheese tonight. We're talking about the upcoming Artisan Cheese Festival. We've got three of my favorite people in the studio here. We have Sue Connolly and Peggy Smith of Cowgirl Creamery, and it's a return visit. So welcome to both of you, and Judy Groverman Walker, and I know you've been here before, Judy, and I don't really remember exactly why, because you do so many different things. So welcome.
Thank you.
And we're also going to have by phone in just a little bit Jill Giacomini of Point Reyes Original Blue Cheese. So we're going to be talking about all things cheese, especially all things cheese festival coming up. It's the 7th annual festival, right?
Yes.
And Judy, you're the executive director now.
Yes.
So maybe you're the one to give us an overview.
Well, it's 3 days of cheese bliss is what we like to say. And it's farm tours and educational seminars. We have restaurants coming in and they'll be doing cheese recipes from different cheesemakers. So it's 3 days of all things cheese. We have a marketplace on Sunday, which will have over 25 different cheese vendors, and you can buy cheeses, sample cheeses. There'll be beer, there'll be wine, there'll be entertainment, all kinds of fun things throughout the whole 3 days.
And where does this all take place?
It takes place at the Sheridan Petaluma, and the farm tours actually are on site.
But, sure, yes, except for the farm tours.
But most everything else is based at the Sheridan in Petaluma.
Uh-huh. And there's luncheons on Friday, right? Some luncheons?
Yes. We have three farm tours that are just straight farm tours with box lunches, and then we've got two farm tours, one at Point Reyes with Lizzie Binder, who is the top Seattle Top Chef contestant. She will be the chef for the Point Reyes luncheon. And then at Keller State Winery, we have Mayette Cristobal, who's coming up from the Getty Museum, and she'll be preparing the lunch.
Oh, at Keller Estates?
Yes.
Out in Lakeville,
mm-hmm.
A place that, you know, very close to my heart. I love Lakeville. I've been up to Keller Estates, but not through it. But it has the best view. And one of the things, if you get to visit it, make sure as you're facing the winery, stop and turn around and look at that beautiful S curve. You can see this big S in the Petaluma River, and it just looks, it's one of my favorite vantage points in South County. What does it cost to go to these events? Are they, is it priced as one big ticket or individual?
No, we've actually priced it a la carte so that, you know, just about anybody can go to just about anything. And the prices are anywhere from $35 a ticket, which is meet the cheesemakers, which is Friday night. It is a reception with over 25 different cheesemakers, mm-hmm. beer, wine, and kind of a mix and mingle situation. And then our most expensive ticket is for brunch on Sunday with Mark Stark, and he's going to be preparing a 3-course meal where he'll demo it in front of you, and then you'll be sampling what he's making. Mm-hmm. It'll be a sparkling wine brunch, and that is $115 a person.
And then what about the marketplace?
Marketplace is $45, and what you get is we give you an insulated cheese bag so that you can go in and shop. We've got, you know, 25 different cheesemakers. You can shop and sample their cheeses. We've got wines, beers, and just about anything you can think of that's cheese or made from local dairy products.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And, you know, so many people think about cheese and wine pairings, but cheese and beer pairings are just phenomenal. You know, it's one of the great matches.
Well, we've got quite a few breweries involved this year because of the cheese and beer movement, and we're really seeing that beer and cheese are just an excellent combination. So we've got some new breweries that are going to be involved this year, and of course Lagunitas has always been very supportive, and they'll be there.
They just support everything. I've always assumed that all of the cheesemakers are from the Bay Area, but that's probably not right.
That is not correct, yes. We have two cheesemakers coming in from out of state. We have Beehive coming in from Utah, and Willapa Hills coming in from Washington State.
Oh, great.
And then we have the rest of the cheesemakers are from throughout California.
From California.
So we've got some that come from the Central Coast. I think we've got a couple coming from Southern California and then some up in the Sacramento Bay, or Sacramento area.
And right now, if technology comes through, we have Jill Giacomini from Point Reyes Original Blue.
Point Reyes Farmstead. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jill?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good.
Great. So tell us about your role in the upcoming Artisan Cheese Festival.
Well, we are one of the ambassador cheese sponsors and have been since the beginning, and are so thrilled that the festival is continuing. It's been such a success now, and it gives us a great opportunity to really get in front of our consumers and, you know, all these folks in the Bay Area and beyond, really, that come to the conference, come to the festival, to, you know, meet the cheesemakers and see what's new, what recipes we're working on in R&D, and, you know, hang out with us, we'll get a little bit more educated on pairings of cheese with different food items and wine and beer and spirits, and great for us to get close to chefs at the grand tasting on Saturday night. It's always really fun to see what new recipe ideas they've cooked up to showcase all of our cheeses, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great event.
Now, when you started out, and what year was it that you first released the
original
blue?
We started making cheese in 2000.
In 2000. And since then, you've added, you no longer have just the original blue, which was your flagship cheese. What other cheeses are you doing now?
We have actually expanded our product line quite a bit in the last 3 years. First, we added Toma, which is a really great buttery flavored taste.
And I think we have it right here in the studio.
Oh, you do? Okay, great. Wonderful. It's the kind of the answer for us, for all those customers or potential customers out there that we lost because they didn't eat blue cheese.
Oh, right.
So
this is really good.
We wanted an everyday cheese, good for, all palates, just very mild. Like I said, a lot of buttery notes up front. And then the finish is a little bit of a kind of what we call a grassy tang finish.
Mm-hmm. It's really excellent.
Yeah,
really
it's a great
excellent.
Melting cheese.
And always, to me, your cheeses always taste like Point Reyes to me in that from the time I first tasted your cheese, and I've written about this for a couple different magazines, They have a briny ocean quality. You know, there's that grassy quality, but there's also this quality that just makes me think of standing up there, you know, in the Point Reyes area, and that wonderful mist and breeze is blowing on me. And I swear, you can taste that in the tone. That it's Toma, right?
Toma, T-O-M-A. Yeah,
T-O-M-A.
Well, you know, that's one of the priorities of our cheesemaker. His name is Cuba Hemmerling, and he's been with us now for 4 years. And when he came on board, you know, we said, you know, it's really important to us as we grow our product line that all of our cheeses taste like our milk. You know, we work so hard to make, you know, the best quality milk possible and to have our milk really represent the flavors of our region. We want those flavors to shine through in our product for the cheeses. And I think he's done a fantastic job.
Yeah, he succeeded. They really do. Yeah. They really shine through.
Well, and one of our newer cheeses is our fresh mozzarella.
Now, that I've not had.
Well, that cheese, it's, you know, it's milk one day and cheese the next, and we mm-hmm. release it on the third day. We're making now. For the last couple of years, we've just been making it seasonally in the summertime. And it was just met with such acclaim, and people really were, you know, knocking down our door. You know, once tomato season was over and we would stop making it, you know, the calls would just, the complaints would come in saying, I'm so used to having it in my kitchen and I want to have it in my restaurant and so forth. So we said, finally, this is the year we're going to make it year-round.
Oh, that's
and
great.
It's been a hit, but what I love so much about the mozzarella is it is a simple and pure translation of the flavors of our milk as cheese. I mean, it tastes like, you know, a glass of milk.
Yes. Yeah, great. I can't wait to try it. I have to say, I don't think our connection is as good as I would like it to be. So what I'm going to suggest is I want to talk a little bit about Fork, and then I'm going to let you go for now. But I'm hoping that sometime maybe you could drive over, be here in the studio, bring all your cheeses, and we'll just spend an hour talking about Point Reyes Farmstead.
I love it. I love
great.
It. I would love to.
So let's do that. So let's give listeners a preview of what exactly Fork is.
Well, it's The Fork.
The Fork, okay.
The Fork is our culinary and educational center. We opened about 2.5 years ago, and it was really, you know, kind of our way of helping to, you know, further our audiences, you know, both consumer and trade, their education about what farm-to-table really means. Especially as it relates to cheese and as it relates to dairy here in Northern California. We really want our customers to get, you know, a little bit closer to the source and see what being a farmstead cheese-making operation is all about. And so when guests come, no matter what type of program they've signed up for, they typically all start with a farm tour, a walking farm tour, and that can be anywhere from a half an hour to an hour and a half. And depending upon, you know, how in-depth we get, but or the type of program. But we want people to see that our cheeses really start with the grass and how we care for our land and our property that's been in our family now for over 50 years and how that's where it all starts. It doesn't even really start with the animals, but it starts first with their feed source, which is the grass that we cultivate. Right there on the property. And so they're out there on the property, they're meeting the animals, they're meeting our employees, often our herdsman, his name is Brian Waymeyer. He is the lead tour guide, and he teaches our guests all about, you know, the life cycle of an animal on our farm and how we raise all of our animals from birth. We operate a closed herd, meaning we don't buy animals to add to our string. Mm-hmm. Primarily Holsteins and Brown Swiss, they see kind of the care and the quality of all the methods that we use, you know, all sustainable, of course, on our farm to ultimately create the best quality milk possible, and then that translates into the flavors of the cheese. So anyway, the Fork is really all about education first. And then when we start to see that folks are kind of, you know, they've had their fill of the farm-to-table education and they've gotten to capacity, then we kind of transition a little bit more to entertainment in all of our programs. So there's always like a tasting session, a focused tasting session. Maybe we'll bring in another local farmer or purveyor from our backyard to showcase their products alongside our cheese. Maybe there'll be a cooking demonstration or a hands-on cooking instruction. Or sometimes we just do farm dinners or social hours, but it's all about really getting folks in the Bay Area a little bit closer to, you know, their cheese source.
Well, it sounds great.
They're a lot of fun. We have guest chefs uh-huh. that come throughout the year. As a matter of fact, for the Artisan Cheese Festival, we have Lizzie Binder coming next Friday, or this coming Friday, actually. She's a former Top Chef contestant. We're so excited to have her. But we've had Dusky Estes, we've had John Ash, Craig Stoll, Cindy Paulson, a whole wonderful slew of great, great, incredible chefs have come to cook with us and cook with our cheese.
Great. And, you know, the last time I was there, I think you had poured the foundation for where the fork was going to be. So I've got to get out there again sometime.
Yes, we have to have you out. Maybe you can come on Friday for Lizzie.
Yeah, probably not, but we'll talk. We'll talk.
Okay.
And sometime soon, sometime maybe later this spring, we'll get you here in the studio.
Great. We'd love that.
Okay. So Jill Giacomini, thank you so much. I'm sorry the sound quality wasn't better. Have a great time at the Artisan Cheese Festival this weekend.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll see you this weekend. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll be right back with more talk in the studio and more cheese tasting. Been caught chewing. That blue cheese. This is Point Reyes Bay Blue, is that right?
It's a new one, yeah. It's really caramelly and delicious.
Yeah, really rich.
Rich.
Really, really rich and delicious. So now, we've heard from Judy about the overview of the Artisan Cheese Festival, and now we have the Cowgirls. Cowgirl Creamery. Sue Conley, Peggy Smith, Peggy, former chef at Chez Panisse. I hope Alice is doing well after the fire.
Yeah, I think they're doing well.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So What's going on with Calgary Creamery these days?
Busy, busy.
We're busy. I mean, we're excited about the festival that's coming up because we do love it. And I know that a lot of people that we work with can't wait to go to the festival, especially the marketplace, because they see all their friends there and then see a lot of customers they know. It's really fun. So,
You have your original location out in Point Reyes Station. You also have a place in the Ferry Plaza and in Washington, D.C. How often do you, how much time do you spend on planes?
Actually, we don't spend.
You don't have to go that way.
A lot of time in Washington, though I am going to go for some time next week. But it's really, it's great to have kind of a national presence.
Mm-hmm. So, and we should tell people what Calgary Creamery is, because you're not just cheesemakers. You do more than that. Well, Tamales Bay Foods, right?
Well, we started the company as a marketing company to promote the cheesemakers from our area, and mm-hmm. there were only a few, back in 1995, 96. And we opened our doors in 97. So the shop was kind of a marketing effort to bring attention to our local fabulous food in Marin, because before that, Marin wasn't really recognized as a food-producing mm-hmm. region. Most of the products made there were going to the commodity market.
Right.
Commodity milk, commodity beef, mm-hmm. commodity lamb. So the recognition in the city was very mm-hmm. limited.
And for people who don't realize what commodity means, I think we can make a good analogy. Back up until the late 60s and I think into the 70s, all the grapes that were grown, say, in Russian River Valley, including the remarkable Pinot Noir that Joe Rocchioli was insistent on planting when everybody else was telling him to plant something else, it was all going into Hardy Burgundy. So that was, it's not called commodity grapes. It wasn't called commodity grapes, but it's sort of the same thing. It's generic. It just goes on to the commodity market at whatever the price is, and it doesn't have to. It's not promoted as being handcrafted or of a place.
Correct.
I guess you could say. So that's the way
blended.
To think about it. Yeah, it's blended,
and it's neutralized so that mm-hmm. the flavor is always the same.
Right. Yeah, and that was exactly. I think that parallel with wine is right.
Yes. Yeah, so we're so lucky. If you look at the cheese map of Marin and Sonoma, you'll see there's how many, Peggy? 20,
I think 27.
27.
Yeah, it's really
cheesemakers.
Just really changed.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are very tiny, but and most of them are farmstead, meaning they're raising their own animals, and mm-hmm. they're you heard Lynn or Jill Giacomini Bosch say that they're starting to use some brown Swiss in mm-hmm. there. That's really a great cow for cheese.
And great to look at. It's a beautiful cow.
So, the dairies are thinking in a different way, the way the grape growers have been thinking for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the best grape for this wine? What's the best milk mm-hmm. for this kind of cheese?
And we also are seeing cheeses, seasonal cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
I had some beautiful sort of off-the-grid sheep's milk ricotta the day after it was made, and it was one of the first spring cheeses. And I know that same ricotta will taste way different 6 months or even 3 months from now.
Yeah.
So cheeses can be very seasonal.
We did bring we make seasonal cheeses, and it is, like you're saying, to highlight the flavor of the milk from that time period. Mm-hmm. And so one that we make in the spring is called St. Pat's, and it's a whole milk cheese made with Jersey cow's milk.
Mm. I've had this before.
Yeah.
And it's been a while. It's really good.
And we just cover it with stinging nettle leaf. And oftentimes, when the cheese is released is dependent on when the stinging nettles come popping up. Mm. So mm-hmm. It does the nettle on the cover of the cheese really highlights the green flavors in the milk from the fresh grass.
Mm. It's I love this cheese. I really love this cheese. I don't buy your cheeses that often because I abuse the privilege. It's really hard to even get them home. I love your cheeses so much.
Well, this one is made from the milk of a specific dairy, and that's John Taverna's organic Jersey dairy out in Chileno Valley. All the other cheeses we make are with Strauss milk.
Strauss, right. That's what I thought.
But Strauss has – he contracts with – four dairies, and they're all certified organic. One is Jersey, one is Holstein. You know, they're all a little bit different. We get all of our milk from his dairy, which is 70% Jersey and 30% Holstein. It's a nice blend.
And the Jersey has a higher fat content, right?
It does.
And that's not a bad thing. You have to say that in this day and age.
Right.
You know, that higher fat content makes for richer cheeses. And am I right in thinking it also makes for a more deeply colored?
Yes, it has a natural carotene.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it is.
And
okay.
Yeah, it really is yellow. You know, Jersey cream is yellow.
And then is your best known cheese Red Hawk?
No.
Oh, okay, because that's one I hear people talk about a lot.
That's our most awarded cheese. But our most popular is Mount Tam.
Oh, okay, the Mount Tam.
Yeah.
And so you have Mount Tam, St. Pat's, Red Hawk. You do a creme fraiche as well. You do a remarkable creme fraiche.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, it's really, really good.
Thanks.
What else?
Well, we have the Wagon Wheel.
Wagon Wheel, I don't know.
Which is similar to the Toma in that it's a milder cheese and more of an everyday cheese and a great melter for grilled cheese and that sort of thing.
Grilled cheese, quesadillas for breakfast. Yeah.
And we use that for our raclette at the Ferry Building. We do a raclette on Saturday and Sunday.
We do a raclette style.
Yeah.
Describe it, okay, for people who don't know it.
Yeah. Well, raclette is a type of cheese that's made in the mountains in Switzerland and France, actually. And what you do is there's like a little salamander or a little...
It's almost like a little tiny toaster oven or something.
A little toast. Well, it's a little heating element. They used to heat coals and hold it above. And you hold it above the face of the cheese. You cut the cheese in half, and it's a large wheel. And you take this. It's basically a heating iron. And you hold it right above the face of the cheese, and it causes the cheese to bubble up. And melt, and then you take this special tool and you scrape the face of the cheese so you're getting that melted cheese, and you kind of drizzle it on top of boiled potatoes or on a piece of toast or whatever you want to have cheese on top of, like vegetables would be really good.
It's really good on potatoes.
But they do it with potatoes traditionally. And so we've been using our cheese to do that kind of style at the Ferry Building.
Cool. And what do you serve yours on?
Potatoes.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, it's really
It's a really good dish, you know, because you don't need very much to satisfy you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. You can overindulge.
You can. That happens sometimes.
Yeah. That's why you should always have something good to drink with it, and you should always be enjoying it with someone else, because then you're drinking, you're talking, so you're eating more slowly, and you don't eat quite as much.
Right.
It's a dangerous thing to do if you're by yourself. So let's see. What else do you have over there? You've got some wrapped up things.
We did bring the Mount Tam just 'cause.
Oh, great.
Everybody's favorite.
And then what are you guys going to be doing as part of the Cheese Festival?
Well, we're teaming up with Point Reyes Blue. I mean, with Original Farmstead.
Farmstead.
and doing a tour. They're going to come to our place in Point Reyes first, and then they're going to go up to the farm. To get a tour.
If only this were television.
To get a tour and to eat some delicious food up there. And we're going to participate in the marketplace and at the Grand Tasting. We're working with Lodge of Sonoma and that's a really fun thing, too.
So the grand tasting works in such a way that what a cheesemaker is teamed up with a restaurant?
Correct. We have 25 different cheesemakers and 25 different restaurants or caterers. We even have a couple of wineries involved. And the chefs will be taking those cheeses and making small dishes, appetizers, desserts, little small bites. And the guests can go through and taste each and every one and vote on their favorite.
Oh, what are you going to make?
I don't know what he's making. I don't know.
Oh,
he's
okay. He's the chef from...
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So we're not cooking. We're just providing the cheese.
You're providing
and,
the
and
cheese.
And he won last year.
I know he won.
Oh, he did. Do you remember what he won for? No?
I don't remember.
That's okay.
I remember it was really good.
I think he had a cauliflower soup, and there was another,
it
like
was
a cheese.
So good, that
there was
soup.
Two things he had.
And that's a difficult, you know, I think cauliflower is difficult.
Yeah.
If it you was, go wrong, you go very, very wrong.
But, you know, it was really, that was really hard because there was some really good food, and it's really a nice way that it's being done because sometimes you'll go to those events and it's really hard to get to the table or
it's one of the reasons I don't go.
This works well because it's little bites and so they're ready for people and it moves pretty quickly and you really have to make it around the room. How long do they have?
3 hours.
That's plenty of time.
Mm-hmm. And we've wine and beer, and you know, it's just a nice, you get a full meal out of it, but it's just a lot of little bites and some great different things to try, and you get to try a lot of different cheeses in different dishes.
Mm-hmm. How did the, if we can, it's okay, but how did this event get started? So 7 years ago, what was the inspiration behind it, or who was the inspiration behind it?
I think it was Tom and Lynn Devereaux. Tom from the Sheraton and Lynn Devereaux was with a, she was doing marketing. Now she's with Laura Chanel.
Oh, okay.
And Marin French.
I think she was really acting as the lead of the California Artisan Cheese Guild and collaborating with Tom to do something.
Yeah, I mean, well,
Sonoma County.
Yeah,
the epicenter.
I think
of
they
cheese.
Really wanted to have a cheese event here because we have so many cheesemakers in this area.
Yeah, we do, and we have some of the best cheeses in the country, and some we've had for quite a long time. I mean,
Laura Chanel.
Yeah. St. George.
Yeah,
they make one cheese.
Oh, yeah.
In a couple different sizes and a couple different length of time that it sits on the shelf, and they've been doing that since I think. Gosh, 1984 maybe?
Yeah,
since
yeah.
1984. We've got Vella, which goes back a really long time.
And Marin French is the longest continually making cheese.
Yeah, it's over 100 years.
Producer in California.
Now, they were acquired by the same French company that acquired Laura Chanel. I think Laura Chanel about five or six years ago. Or more?
Yeah, they were more recently.
Yeah, they
acquired.
Were. Yeah, I was. I heard that the other day, and I was like, oh, okay.
And it's really interesting what they're doing. They're making a lot of changes out there.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
They're putting in an aging room and experimenting a little more. And if you see what's happened with Laura Chanel, I mean, that's a fabulous place.
Yeah. And God, I remember when I was living in Lakeville and my girls were tiny.
Yeah.
Going out. It was a great place to go for a picnic.
Yeah.
You could just go. You could buy the schloss.
Yeah.
Schloss. And some crackers.
Uh-huh.
And sit on the side of the lake and watch the red-winged blackbirds in the spring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, and I have to say, the people who they have brought in from France to help run the company are really fantastic and very community-minded.
Great.
And I think that is just from their experience in France that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, you identify with your land and your place and your community.
More French influence is always a good thing.
It's not a bad thing.
I think my grandson is going to the brand new French-American charter school.
Oh, great.
So, and it's, you know, it's just a wonderful influence on so many just different ways.
Yeah. Is that in Sebastopol?
No, it's in Santa Rosa.
Oh, Santa Rosa.
And, it started up just this year. He's the oldest because he's in sixth grade.
Oh, my.
So he'll be in the first eighth grade graduating class.
Wow.
But he did things. They had a special sort of a cooking day. Well, they've had a couple of food days, and I'm actually going to be doing a segment for the sixth graders. One of the teachers approached me, and she wanted to help them learn how to research. She says, well, why don't we just have them, each student chooses a place in the world and researches the food. And they're, well, why don't we do the departments of France? You know, it's the French-American school.
Yeah.
You got how many? You got 30, something like that.
And so, they could almost find the counterpart here.
Yeah. Yeah, you could. Yeah, so I'm really, I don't know when we're going to do it. I'm hoping soon because school's going to be out. But, you know, they haven't been able to institute the French lunch to the degree that they've wanted to. Turns out they're going to have to build out their own on-campus kitchen to be able to do that. But they've had some days where they had French-style lunch.
Oh, nice.
Three courses. You know, real, you know, china, silverware, flowers, conversation. So
that sounds good.
Yeah, it's a great little place. And plus, Lucas would be in heaven right here. I can't tell him, he'll be jealous. His first bite of food actually was cauliflower soup.
Oh, really?
Cauliflower soup with black olive tapenade. Mm. He was 6 months old, and I'd taken my daughter out to lunch at K&L Bistro, and he was with us. And you know, he's, you know, been nursing. He's six months old. And he was watching her eat that cauliflower soup. He'd watch it go from the bowl to her mouth. And I said, give him a bite.
Yeah.
So she gave him a bite. And he just opened his mouth like a little bird. He wanted more. And he has this amazing palate. He loves blue cheese. I've had him on. I had him on with some French cheesemakers.
And oh,
he'll give you a critique of your cheeses. He'll tell you how they taste, what he likes and what he doesn't.
Yeah.
So I want to move on to sort of another topic. Judy, any of you, just jump in here, because it's something I'm curious about, is what challenges are Bay Area cheesemakers? I mean, first of all, you guys. I'm just curious, what challenges do our cheesemakers face other than getting, you know, you have to let people know about your cheese. You have to find your market and get your cheese to your market. But what other sort of challenges are people facing? Is sourcing milk a problem? I know for some cheesemakers, there's been a difficulty the last few months.
Yeah, there's a cheesemakers curriculum at the College of Marin.
Uh-huh.
And it's a certificate program. It takes 2 years, and there's, you know, a whole section of courses that you can take to get their certificate. And so many people have gone through this, and they're ready to get started making cheese, and they can't find a milk source.
So it's the milk source
that's... It's a huge problem, huge challenge. And then secondarily, the FDA has initiated Congress initiated the Food Safety Act of 2011, which is another huge hurdle to comply with.
What is this? Is this something that is easy for big, huge cheese conglomerates and really expensive for small cheesemakers?
Yeah, it's really hard at a small scale. You know,
what does this involve now?
Well, I think it's not hard for a cheesemaker to have the sanitation standards needed, but there's a lot of testing, lab testing, and so the science background necessary to do that, and the paperwork is really overwhelming.
And do we know why there are those new regulations? Was it to solve a problem, or was it for some other reason?
Do you want to answer that, Peg?
I'm not sure if it was to solve a problem, but I think they're just moving in that direction. I think it's almost a worldwide movement into the direction of one sanitary procedure with sets of the paperwork is really standardized so that easy to go in there and follow.
Now, there was a huge, huge discussion a number of years ago about the new, what was it, Codex?
Yeah.
Regulations, and it was going to get rid of all raw milk and raw milk cheeses. And there was that very sweet movie about the cheese nun.
Yes.
Where do things stand with that?
Well, there's still discussion about raw milk with the age that they want the FDA is thinking is an acceptable age for it to be released at.
And what are they? Is it 60 days?
Right now it's 60 days. And they're still in flux about what they think it should be. So
are they suggesting making it longer?
Yes, they are. And you know, we're a little bit worried about that.
How would that affect you?
Well, it wouldn't affect us as, as at Cowgirl because we don't use raw milk. I just mean the industry in general.
In general. And that would, I mean, I don't quite understand the mechanics of it, but there was some talk about it affecting worldwide, cheese production worldwide, that they were basically trying to obliterate raw milk cheeses, especially younger raw milk cheeses, worldwide.
They have calmed down on that a little bit, but it will come back.
It will.
I mean, it's not, because, you know, the head of FDA dairy thinks that raw milk, blue cheese, European cheese, soft ripened cheese are very dangerous.
No, that's, you know, I don't know if I would say that exactly. That they're a little cautious about it. But
yeah. No, and is this evidence based or is it just nervousness? Because I mean, has there been a problem?
I think there have been problems in the past with some cheeses, but it's a little bit of an overgeneralization.
Yeah, overall, cheese is extremely safe, you know, as a category.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about some of the things that you hear about that are, you know, outbreaks of salmonella and all this, it seems like it's coming from large produce farms, large vegetable and fruit farms that have been contaminated by something. Not the things that people tend to be afraid of, which is cheese and, you know, oh my God forbid, a rare burger.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just kind of the only way I will ever eat it.
Or an egg.
Or an egg or an oyster.
Yeah.
And it's the problems typically are not coming from there.
Right.
So I find it puzzling.
Yeah, I think it's just something to work on. I'm not sure what the answer is because, of course, we want a safe food supply.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
We want
a safe food supply. There's no question about that.
So what, you know, what? How do we do that without, you know, crushing the individuality of small farmers and small food producers?
But it all seems to me getting off into perhaps a political realm. It seems a little upside down and counterintuitive to me. And it's something that I'm also confronting personally right now because my new puppy has some health issues. And the vet was very, very, two vets, one at the emergency room. I mean, she had this look of near horror when I said that both of my dogs eat a homemade raw diet. And she said, she said, well, Purina makes a very good food. And to me, it seems like you cook it yourself. If you can grow it yourself, even better. And if you can't grow it yourself, you go to your neighbor or you go to the farmer that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that those are the things that are the safest because you know everything about them. You know where they've come from.
Right.
And we're spoiled because we live in such a great growing area.
Yeah.
But yet there's this trust in, oh, well, a corporation is better able to fabricate foods that are going to be better for your dog. And that's what you should trust. You shouldn't trust this other thing. And then we also see that, we see that sort of look to the corporation first in foods for people.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems so counterintuitive to me. And I'm wondering, are we ever going to be able to flip it over and get back to what's close to home and knowable and seeable?
Well, I think that we have a strong movement in the Bay Area toward that, certainly. And, you know, getting back to that Food Modernization Act, I mean, a big part of that is so that there is traceability, which is it is really important that
well,
we're
like
able
oysters, you buy oysters and there's a tag and you can trace them back.
Yeah. So, but I'm with you. You know, I think making your own pet food is the best way to go. That's funny. The vet was kind of horrified.
I mean, that happens all the time. I mean, I think veterinarians get about as much nutritional education in school as doctors, mm-hmm. doctors for humans. And that's really not very much. So they don't know, and everybody's afraid of being sued and making the wrong recommendation. And the one vet who was horrified, she was working at a facility that is nationwide. So I think there's probably standardized recommendation policies.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, and you know, she doesn't know who I am. She doesn't know if I'm going out and buying, you know, the cheapest hamburger I can find at Costco,
yeah.
you know, and mixing it with something canned. And, you know, she has no idea that... She has no idea I'm going to the best farms in Sonoma County, spending way more money than I should. But, you know, I have dogs that eat 4 ounces of food a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can feed them really well and not, you know, have to be homeless to do it. Anyway, that's mouthful. We always diverge a little bit.
Yeah.
One thing about our food, I mean, our cheese festival is mm-hmm. that it supports the Sonoma Land Trust and the Marin Agricultural Land Trust.
Two awesome organizations. That is great. I was going to get to, you know, that sort of thing. So the mm-hmm. Sonoma Land Trust is just a great. And again, they, you know, they have a lot of land in dairy country, including that over 100,000 acres out in Lakeville now. Lakeville, you know, still has quite a bit of dairy, though, you know, grapes are going in and some of the dairies have failed. But they've preserved a lot of the Lakeville land that's right there on San Pablo Bay. And then Marin Agricultural Land Trust is
yeah.
so phenomenal in what they've done. They've just done incredible, incredible things, not just to preserve land, but also they have a lot of really good outreach programs,
mm-hmm.
you know, the farm tours and connecting people. And I love the Point Reyes Farmers Market.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you guys see a lot of business because of that market?
Actually, no.
No? Well, when I go to that market, I always come over.
Well, thank you.
No, but our business in Point Reyes continues to increase. I think there's just a real need, as you said, for mm-hmm. people to connect with the mm-hmm. farms and the people who make food. And so, you know, more and more people are coming out there to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, where are you making your cheeses? Now, you opened a facility in Petaluma, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, we make Red Hawk in Point Reyes.
Okay.
And then we make most of the other cheeses in Petaluma.
Uh-huh. And whereabouts in Petaluma is it?
It's on First Street. It's
Foundry Wharf.
Yeah,
Oh, yeah. It's a great place.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and we operate a wholesale distribution company.
Right. That's Tomales Baked Foods, right?
Yeah,
oh, and it operates
location.
Out of Petaluma.
Yes.
Right on I love Petaluma. Where do you two spend most of your time? In Petaluma?
I'm mostly in Petaluma, uh-huh. and Sue spends a lot of time in Point Reyes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm hopping around because I'm trying to keep an eye on the production as well as the kitchens because mm-hmm. each of our operations has a carryout.
Right. Now, do you oversee that, or is that a vendor that you...
Oh, no, that's us.
That is a...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was a vendor for
right.
5 years,
yeah.
but we have it back.
Cool. Tell yeah. us about that.
Well, Sue, why don't you talk about that?
Well, in Point Reyes, it's called the Cantina, and we have a full kitchen there, so we do mm-hmm. roast chicken and all kinds of salads and picnic foods. Mm-hmm. It's all designed to carry out to the park for a hike or
uh-huh.
whatever. And then in San Francisco, it's called Sidekick, and it's right next to our cheese shop.
Uh-huh.
And the focus there is really about melted cheese,
oh.
grilled cheese, and
oh.
open-faced grilled cheese, and flatbread grilled cheese. Yeah. And
what's your favorite grilled cheese these days?
Hmm. Well, I love Gruyere, so mm-hmm. I like caramelized. This is so pedestrian. Caramelized onions and Gruyere, and Sue always adds a little bit of fromage blanc in with the shredded Gruyere,
mm-hmm.
So that it's softy, a little bit softer,
uh-huh.
mellows it out a bit with some mustard. I like honey mustard.
Ah, okay. What's yours?
Well, we have one on the menu at Sidekick, and it's a flatbread. A naan is my favorite.
I love
the Indian bread.
Yes.
But we cut it. It's really hard, but we cut it in half, you know, the
uh-huh.
flat way, and put Lancashire cheese and chutney. And that's really it's become a traditional English combination because they have the influence
yeah,
of India.
Right. Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is good.
I've been doing, when I get a baguette from Raymond's Bakery, mm-hmm. you know, Raymond is, he's just so great. I'll take whatever cheese. Often it's something from Wyrush Farm mm-hmm. and a length of chorizo uh-huh. from Franco. Uh-huh. And put it on, you know, get the cheese all nice and melted and fry up, the cut the chorizo lengthwise and put that in there. And if I have some salsa verde, some Italian salsa verde, and just, you know, split open that thin baguette.
That sounds good.
It is. It is. It's really, really good.
They need to have that at the ballpark.
You know, I did something else with that, with the fresh sheep's milk cheese as well. I did something I'd never done before. So guest on Mouthful, I think he was here 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago. He brought, it was Bloomfield Farm, Nick from Bloomfield Farms, oh, yeah. uh-huh. and he brought the most gorgeous colored leaves I have ever seen. I mean, they were just, I wanted to frame them and make them last like that forever. And as we were walking out, he says, oh, yeah, he says, we steam them and use them for tortillas. I said, oh, that's interesting. So I started thinking about it, and I had some chorizo, and I had all of this sheep's milk ricotta. So I blanched them.
Yeah.
For about 5 minutes. Then I set them out, and I cooked the crumbled the chorizo up and cooked it. And I put chorizo, a bunch of the sheep's milk ricotta, and some avocado, because I had it.
Oh.
And just rolled it up like a big, like a burrito or like a big grape leaf. God, it was good.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, and my Lucas, my grandson, he ate two really big ones. And to have an 11-year-old boy say, this is so good. And it's like, yes, and it's collard greens.
Low carb.
Yeah, so it was really fun. I like melted cheese a lot, too. So we've got just, you know, about 5 minutes. Let's move back to the cheese festival. How do people get tickets, Judy?
We have a website in which it tells about all of the events, and you can get your tickets online. A lot of the events will sell out, so we encourage people to get their tickets in advance.
Is anything sold out yet?
Yes. All of the farm tours are sold out. Yeah,
and they've been sold out for a while. I checked the website, and it's, like, gone.
Within the first 3 days, they sold out.
Okay.
Wow.
And then the cheese-making sessions, we've got two of the four sold out.
Uh-huh.
The website is artisancheesefestival.com.
Mm-hmm. And so, and you can just click through and buy the tickets right there.
Correct.
Now, what about for the Grand Tasting and for the Marketplace? Will those tickets be available at the door?
You know, I can't promise that.
Okay. It's only if they don't sell out.
That's right. We may hold a few back for the Marketplace. We will not probably hold them back for the Grand Tasting.
Mm-hmm.
But we will keep selling tickets as long as we have them available.
Okay. And you've mentioned a couple of times some of the events have entertainment.
Yes, we've got a band at the Marketplace this year, and we actually, last year we brought in one giant tent, and we had a little bit of congestion in the tent, and so this year we have two giant tents.
Cool. And who is the, what's the music?
I'm not quite sure.
That's okay. But it's a surprise.
But it is more background music. It is.
Okay.
We're gonna,
so you can still talk.
Right.
Still
we're going to create an talk. Area that's more of loungy, you know, have a little bit of snack and a little bit of drink and relax and then go back and shop some more.
Mm-hmm. And what are the hours of the Marketplace?
The Marketplace is from 12 to 4. But if you attend the brunch, you get early entry into the Marketplace.
Oh, okay.
And so you can get into the Marketplace at 11. So it's kind of a special opportunity for mm-hmm. those people that want to go to the brunch.
Yeah. And then for the Grand Tasting, what are the hours?
Grand Tasting goes from 6 to 9.
Uh-huh. Cool. How do people get your cheeses? I mean, I see them everywhere.
Well, we sell them a lot around the Bay Area. We're at farmers markets. We're at the Marin Farmers Market and the San Francisco Farmers Market and
Marin Country Mart.
Yeah,
on Saturday
and Point Reyes when it's open.
Yeah, and Point Reyes opens in June, and
yeah.
I will be writing about that. What I love about that market is it's so much of that place. You know, that market could not take place anywhere else. It's the Point Reyes Market, and you know it instantly.
And the farmers are from the area.
Yeah, they're all within like a few miles.
Because some of the grocery stores and such on the street didn't want the competition, so they asked us to narrow the focus. We wanted to make it, you know, Sonoma and Marin. They said, no, just do it Marin.
And I think that's really wise. Not, I mean, God knows I love Sonoma completely.
I know.
But having something with such local character is just really wonderful.
It's local characters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that like challenge
yeah, it's
made
like
it
the,
better.
Occidental Market.
Yeah,
the Occidental
exactly.
Market is very Occidental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And I know that, let's see, Faircrest Market carries your cheeses.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Andy's.
Oliver's. Pacific. Does Pacific have it right now?
Pacific.
They should.
Yes.
Whole Foods
and Petaluma Market. Oh, gosh.
Sonoma Market.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Look, always the first thing. Look at your local farmer's market. If your local farmer's market doesn't have it, go to your locally owned independent market. Start with those two places because it's always good to shop as close to home as you can for lots of reasons.
And, you know, I think in all of those markets, there are a lot of local cheeses that we are so lucky to have so many good cheesemakers in the area.
Bleeding Heart, Ashinda, So Young.
Andante.
Laura
Chanel, of course. But, I mean, all those.
Yeah. Those. And Bohemian.
Bohemian
is actually
great.
Hard to find
sometimes.
But
Bellwether.
Nicasio Valley.
Nicasio Valley, Valley Ford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two Rock.
Yeah. See him at the farmer's market on Saturdays at Wells Fargo Center. And on that note, we are out of time. So, again, my guests, Judy Groverman Walker, Executive Director of the Artisan Cheese Festival, and Peggy Smith and Sue Conley of Calgo Creamery and Tamales Bay Foods. Thanks so much to all of you for taking time on a Sunday night to be here. I know you're busy.
Thank you.
Next week, it's with great pleasure that I will be welcoming Michael Traverso and Fred Thumhart and as many single malt scotches that they decide they want to carry. They founded, right about the time that we sadly lost Traversos, they were founding the Sonoma County Single Malt Society. That's what we will be talking about. In the meantime, have a great week. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy spring. Meet me here next week on the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, Mouthful on KRCB.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
We got some beans and